Welcome back to the mindfulness for young adult session. Now we are in the next item that is related to a Dhamma topic that we are going to have a short Dhamma sermon. And nowadays we are discussing Sabbasava Sutta. Sabbasava Sutta is available in Majjhima Nikaya, and it is fairly an interesting sutta where Buddha talks about seven different strategies to deal with various fetters in ourselves, fetters in our mind, influxes in our mind. So these are, we can say, fairly rooted tendencies in our mind. So this is how our mind is fairly conditioned. This is how our mind is habituated to deal with any kind of a situation. Suppose you are seeing someone and you are very much like pre-written or pre-coded system where your mind operates in that situation, in that way. Suppose you are hearing something, listening to something, and at that time how to react, how to deal with is very much like pre-coded. So this is how our mind operates. So Buddha say, so if we are able to understand that, recognize that, and if we are able to see it, then there's a possibility of deconditioning ourselves, in a way reprogramming ourselves. So very much like we are puppets of the already available habits, and now Buddha is coming up with various strategies to be free. To be free from this typical way of reacting, and now to be vigilant about what's really going on. Then we basically have a choice what to do, rather than simply being a victim of the situation, rather than simply being kind of driven by the situation, driven by emotions. Now Buddha is coming up with various strategies to be free from such tendencies, free from such habitual patterns, and then to have a kind of a choice so that we can take the correct path. Now in the Sabbasava Sutta, Buddha emphasized that if one needs to completely remove all these conditions, preconditioning, then one has to recognize it. One needs to understand it. Only by seeing, understanding, one is able to completely free one's mind from these already conditioned or programmed nature in the mind. So Buddha coming up with seven strategies. First one through the Dasana Pahadabba, that is by seeing, recognizing when such thing happens in the mind. So one has to step back and look at it, be mindful about it. And then one can recognize, okay, there are certain thoughts going on, certain conditioning going on, certain biases are going on. So we are operating according to those biases, preferences. So likewise, we should be able to step back and recognize the existing situation. If there is any unsatisfaction, we should be able to recognize. If there is any kind of agitation, we should be able to recognize. So this is where we directly in touch with the mind, directly observe the mind, and rather than simply driven by a situation, we should be able to come out of it and look at it. So this is the first method, briefly I am now mentioning. And then second one we discussed last time, that is the Sangvara Pahatabba, where we need to restrain the faculties. Don't just use your eyes to look at certain bad things which will ultimately pollute the mind. Don't just use the ears to listen, because it might take you to confusion. Don't just use the nose, tongue, body, mind, if it is contributing towards some kind of a pollution in the mind. So therefore Buddha asks us to guard the senses. That is Sangvara Pahatabba. And then Patisevana Pahatabba, that we discussed last time actually. That is where when we are dealing with day-to-day activities, we have to, as human beings, we have to associate others, we have to do a job as human beings, maybe as lay people. And we have to live in some sort of a safety place, a house, and again we have to take food, and similarly we have to take some medicine if we are not well. So likewise, there are so many things that we are using. So while using all these external entities, how to protect our mind, how not to pollute it, how not to generate defilements during this day-to-day usage of various items. So that is where Patisevana Pahatabba is involved. Because we definitely have to use our house, use our vehicles, use our, say, occupation, and have to deal with others, have to associate people. So on that occasion, we have to be careful on how to maintain our serenity, maintain our peace in the mind, maintain sort of an unagitated mind, not to get deluded, not to become sort of conceited. So likewise, there are certain skills that we need to develop. So whenever during day-to-day activities we are engaged with, so we have to again be careful not to get carried away by various defiled situations. And then we can discuss today Adivasana Pahatabba, how one can use patience and endurance as a way of cutting off already available tendencies. Now this patient endurance is something extremely important, because if we are impatient, if we are quickly reacting, then spiritual path is very difficult, because you know the typical mind is really reacting and become emotional and immediately jumping to conclusions, going into arguments. So likewise, we are so reactive, and nowadays that trend is extremely developing. And if you consider the good old days, people are fairly, we can say, somewhat patient. But nowadays we need everything instantly. So that kind of instantaneous attitude, expecting attitude, results and everything instantaneously. So that attitude actually is quite harmful to our well-being. Now this is where Buddha talks about Adivasana Pahatabba, how one can maintain one's endurance, one's patience, so that one can avoid the arising of unarisen defilements. One can remove already arisen defilements, and one can maintain already available good qualities, not to make them harmed. And again, one can develop already available good qualities because one is maintaining some patience. Now patience is something really praised by the Buddha, Kanti Paramang Tapoti Dikkha. So Buddha says patient endurance or patience is the most important austerity in this spiritual life. Because as you know, even though we are trying to do very good things for ourselves, so those necessary qualities are not immediately developing. We need fair amount of patience, otherwise we simply give it up. Because if we are impatient and asking results, quick results, then such thing may not happen. So as a result, we may get discouraged, and we may leave the situation because we are impatient. But on the other hand, if one is patient and enduring the situation, then there's a fair possibility that we may be able to overcome the already available obstacle, or to calm down ourselves, relax ourselves, so that we can take a proper decision, unbiased decision, because we are fairly patient, we have the patience. Now, here Buddha talks about various external conditions as well. Suppose we are going through some heat, going through some cold. On such situation, we can't actually change the outside environment. Now we, of course, trying using AC, air conditioners, fans and etc. to condition our room as we wish. But there are still limits that you can't have complete control. Suppose you are in an outside situation where you have no control at all. on such occasion, if you become impatient, then again you get into trouble. But at that time, if you know that you have now done the best you can, and now the rest of the part is based on the dip, based on the sort of the based on the patience. So at that time, we have to patiently endure the situation. Otherwise, if we get into arguments with others, if we start to demand so many things, then it is very difficult to have a kind of friction-free mind, fairly patient mind, or unpolluted, relaxed, unagitated mind is only possible when we have patience. And not only that, Buddha says, now typically we as human beings, we have to eat, we have to drink, and we have to maintain our body. So all these things are there. Even on such situations, sometimes we have to bear certain difficulties. Suppose you are in a long journey and you ran out of food. So at that time, can't help. I mean, till you reach the destination, assume there is no food, no water. So we have to have kind of a patience to bear the situation, to be with the situation, to endure the situation. Similarly, suppose you have to deal with another person. Suppose you are in a office environment that you are there are so many few subordinates or some your superiors who are not sort of coordinating with you. So you may have, you may can actually try proper means to coordinate with them, but if they are beyond your control, then basically we better need to develop patience, because otherwise we are getting into arguments and quarrels and ultimately we suffer. But if we have patience, then that actually save ourselves, save a lot of time and our mind, so that we are able to maintain the harmony among ourselves. We are not immediately getting into arguments. We are immediately not going to go take to conclusions. Rather, we are able to step back and analyze the situation, observe the situation, because such patience is there in the mind. Suppose even if you are doing some meditation, so there also you need to have a lot of patience. Not only typical daily activities, but even in the spiritual path, patience is a must. Suppose you are sitting cross-legged and your, say, knees start to ache. So at that time, if you immediately get up, change your posture, then the already build-up samadhi, concentration, wisdom might be sort of disturbed. So at that time also you need to have a fair amount of patience. Then only you are able to sort of overcome that situation. And say someone is making a sound, kind of a noise, and coughing. And all these things are really possible even in a retreat environment. So at that time, if we immediately jump to conclusions, immediately react, then it is very difficult to again calm down the mind. So if we are able to calm down ourselves, so that actually really helps. It is not only kind of into the mundane level, but Buddha says, sache neresi attanam kanso upahato yatha esa patto sinibbanam sarambho tena vichyati. But this is coming in Dhammapada. But Buddha says there is like a broken gong, say bronze vessel, it's broken. So once you hit it, there is no kind of a vibration coming out. There is no echoing. Rather, it simply stops because it is broken. So Buddha gave this as a simile and asked us to avoid reacting, avoid becoming sort of impulsively react. Rather, stop yourself, calm down yourself. Kind of a shock absorbing is there. So if one is able to maintain this kind of an attitude, even when someone trying to push your buttons, if you are able to calm down yourself, not to impulsively react, then Buddha says, esa patto sinibbanam sarambho te na vichyati. Then you are almost very much like attained Nibbana. There is no kind of a revenge in your mind. There is no sort of a tit-for-tat attitude in your mind. So this is something very interesting, because we are getting into arguments, we are getting into various quarrels, conflicts, because again and again, so that kind of, say, revengeful thoughts come into the mind. So we are always telling, our mind always telling, he is wrong, I am correct, like that. So we are justifying ourselves. So if we are able to calm down such kind of a tit-for-tat attitude, then we are able to slowly overcome that situation. We can maintain the well-being among ourselves. And therefore Buddha says, endures ill-spoken and unwelcome words. So it is not that always people may praise us, welcome ourselves. Rather, they even deny ourselves, simply look down ourselves. They may talk ill about ourselves. And they even criticize ourselves. In such situations, if we, rather than getting to argue, are we able to patiently step back and watch ourselves? Are we able to say sort of thank you? Are we able to come back and see whether really all those bad qualities that he or she has mentioned, are they really within me? Is there is anything that I can correct in my side? So likewise, so that corrective attitude, corrective measure is very important, because otherwise it's very difficult to maintain, even say in your family life or even a sort of a common environment, because there's a kind of a people that we can't always expect kind of a praise, kind of a embracing attitude from others. But there are others who are criticizing, critical and looking down, and all these things are there. Especially when we are dealing with others, so we have to respect others, we have to sort of careful about others' views, not to hurt them, and even if they hurt, without immediately getting to sort of arguments. So these kind of many situations are there, even in the daily activities, even at your office, at family life, at your house. So maybe even in the, say, train, bus, so everywhere it is there. So if we are able to maintain some patience, so then most difficult situation we can overcome. If we are not patient, then immediately we get into react, shout, hit each other, and ultimately we regret later. So that is there. And again Buddha says, bears the contact with gadflies, mosquitoes, wind, sun, snakes, and all these are actually fairly relevant to the monk's life, where monks were used to dwell in the, say, what you call in forest situations, forest, where those all the comforts are not available. So those people, those monks, have to fairly maintain kind of a patience. Otherwise, if they go and ask various things, it is not appropriate. And again, if they simply leave the forest and go to the city, then of course, even though the luxuries or comforts are there, so the time available to meditate, and again the sort of the calmness or the silence available in the environment is maybe very less. So even when one go to a forest or a retreat situation, then one has to be able to maintain one's calmness even with less requirements, not demanding so many things, being frugal of the situation. So this is all actually related with the patience. And bears arisen bodily feelings that are painful, racking, sharp, piercing, disagreeable, distressing and threatening the life. So as you know, we all are subjected to various situations. So we never know what will happen to the body. And likewise, in that situation, suppose you are alone and you don't have much control, and that time there may be certain part that we have to endure. Suppose you encounter a certain illness and you are admitted to hospital, and suppose they did the best they can do, but still maybe pain is available, still you are suffering. So that part simply we have to bear, no help. Everything else has done, whatever the best thing was done, but even that situation, if we start to quarrel, shout, and curse others and all these things, then unnecessarily we are even harming the relationships, disturbing the relationships. And at that time actually there is a big responsibility in our side, that if we know really well that they are doing the best, simply we can appreciate what they are doing and we can calm down ourselves. Without adding mental pain to the existing physical pain, we can calm down ourselves, be impatient till the situation relax or till the situation turns towards the betterment. So these are the situations that actually we can come across or we can look into when it is in the even day-to-day activities and even in the spiritual life. Now suppose someone is talking about his own achievements and even either in the mundane life or even in the spiritual life, if we are so much impatient, then it would be more difficult to progress in our side, progress in our meditation, because we are so impatient. But rather, if we understand, okay, he has done or he had really worked hard, so that's why he or she is able to experience this kind of a situation, but I am a kind of a beginner, I am just started, so I need fair amount of time. This mind develops in a very slow manner. So likewise, we have to be fairly realistic so that we have enough time and we are not too much expecting results. Rather, we are able to endure the situation, we can continue the path without too much of a demanding attitude. So that kind of a less demanding attitude is very important, because every time if we start to complain, demand so many things, so that reflects that inner unstability, that reflects immaturity in ourselves. But if we are able to calm down even in a difficult situation, patiently enduring the situation, so that reflects fair amount of calmness, fair amount of spiritual maturity in ourselves. Actually, I can remember one statement made by Venerable Achan Cha, and he says, of all the qualities we develop in the spiritual life, patient endurance is the most important. Because the mindfulness, concentration, wisdom, so many things are there that we are developing. But Achan Cha says, patient endurance is the most important. Because if one has patient endurance, so that person actually will open the path to develop all other qualities. If you are so impatient, then you become agitated, you start to shout, you start to get up, leave the center, go away from your home, and all the many difficulties are there. So then it is impossible to develop spiritually. But on the other hand, if you are patiently enduring, so that actually opens the path, gives us a lot of opportunities to develop, because we are patient, we have time, we can spend some time, we can be with the situation. So likewise, patient endurance is very important. And say even in the vipassana, suppose you are able to achieve some understanding and not yet fully completed, you can see that, you can recognize that, but you understand, but still I have a lot to do. So you have to patiently do it. So if we simply become impatient that I have to do this, I have to do that, so much impatience, then that itself become a burden to the mind, that itself develop fair amount of stress, tension in our mind. So if we have fair amount of patience, so we can have a tension-free mind, stress-free mind, because we allow things to happen, we can bear it, we can cope with the situation. So these are all very necessary qualities that Buddha talks here. So if we have this patience, therefore Buddha says, we can overcome many defilements which could have happened, could have arisen in the mind if we were not patient. Suppose someone is going to argue us, someone is blaming us. So at that time, if we understand, so he is in a fairly rage situation and he is quite angry. So if I am going to react, then we are going to a conflict. We are getting to an argument, quarrel. But at that time, how about I am practicing patience? I simply understand he is not in a good mood. This is not the time to convince him. This is not the time to argue. This is not the time to explain the correct situation. Rather, you allow him to calm down. Allow him to just blame. You will be silent. Like a tortoise taking all his limbs inside and just be. till the other person calms down. So these are certain situations actually we can come across, we might come across in our day-to-day activities, in while we are dealing with others. So therefore Buddha says, patience is one important quality that we need to develop, we need to have. And if one have that, there is a high possibility that you can maintain a peaceful mind. Since we are not reacting, we are not immediately trying to go and argue or hit another person. You are being patient so that your mind is well protected. You didn't agitate the mind. You didn't become impatient. You didn't agitate the mind. So the already existed calmness, peacefulness, say relaxed attitude is well maintained, is well guarded. So this is something that Buddha emphasized in this Adivasana Pahatabba. Pains that should be abandoned by enduring. Asava Adivasana Pahatabba. So if we know these different methods, we can say all these methods have practical applications in day-to-day activities, in while we are dealing with others. All these seven methods can be used. It is not that we have to work out with them in a linear manner, one after the other, but any of these methods can be applied depending on the situation. So I conclude today's Dhamma sermon with that. Now I open the session for questions.
Avasarai Bhante, there's currently 6 questions.
Yeah.
Question number 1. General question. Dear Venerable Sir, my question is regarding how we assess the quality of mindfulness while engaged in practice and during day-to-day activities. Based on my practical experience, the common indicators I have at the moment is the building up of concentration and one-pointedness with mindful observation of the breath or the walking process. However, during the day-to-day practice, there is less concentration and it is difficult to get a gauge of being mindful or not sometimes. Appreciate if Bhante can explain a bit about how to gauge the quality and the depth of mindfulness. What are the indicators of development of mindfulness during the practice? With metta, that's the end.
So actually this is something that you yourself have to reflect. Step back and see how mind reacts in a way. Now say for example you are engaged in walking meditation. So at that time, say 1 week ago, you started the practice and your mind was so distracted. You couldn't even walk 5 steps. But today, this week, now you can walk 10 steps. So you are there, you can understand, okay, slightly now mindfulness has developed. And previously you couldn't focus your attention onto something even for 1 minute. Mind again and again jumps. There is no stability at all. But now today, assume that you are able to maintain your mind focused to your attention, say 5 minutes. So that indicates certain improvement in your mindfulness. And say, if you go to little deep, suppose at the beginning you couldn't recognize various defilements in the mind. You immediately become a victim of it. Only at the level of regression that you understood, or you simply regret about what has happened. Because you become a victim of the situation. You are fairly driven by the situation. But later, say as we develop mindfulness, we can understand, okay, still defilements are coming in the mind, developing in the mind. I couldn't immediately stop it, but I am not immediately going to react. I have the ability to be patient. I have the ability to step back and look at the situation. So this is another level that we can recognize. Now, of course, the burning or the thinking still going on, but we are not going to break the precept. We are not going to harm another person, blame another person. So that indicates that our mind has now, to some further level, mindful. And suppose as we develop mindfulness, so this skill further develops. So we are, this burning level become less and less. Suppose we are, say a few months ago, we are quickly get into sort of arguments or quickly get into quarrels. But now it is less. Now say some time ago, say mind is burning with lust, burning with anger. Now it is less. Now we can now recognize how anger develops in the mind, how lust develops in the mind. So we are coming sort of yoniso manasikara, applying yoniso manasikara, so we are coming to the source. We are coming to the beginning level, the starting level, so that it is not overwhelming ourselves. So this indicates an improvement in mindfulness, because as we develop mindfulness, the defilements could be recognized at their very inception. So we don't need to become simply driven by the defilements. Rather, we have our own choice, we have our own skill to step back and watch it objectively. So this indicates fair amount of development of the mindfulness. So it's a kind of a qualitative development in ourselves and how we are dealing with others. We can recognize others' feelings, and we can have some amount of empathy about others. So there are many other qualities developing within ourselves. So that basically indicates that mindfulness has improved. So there are many indicators that we can say. And on the other hand, now of course various instruments are also developed just to check how much mindfulness has developed, how much concentration has developed. Functional MRI machines and all these things are being used today to check your brain and how much prefrontal cortex has developed and amygdala has decreased, and all these things are some new findings from the science coming today. And all sorts of scientific findings also say that there's a improvement in one's brain because of the mindfulness practice. So probably you can find that instrument as well. Yeah, back to you, Chatu.
Question number 2 of 6. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, thank you for your previous Dhamma talks on Satipatthana analysis, which helps to put the practice related understanding into a better perspective. We recall Bhante mentioning about Indriya Bhavana Sutta as another helping sutta to understand some subtle points of the body contemplation practice. Is there any suttas that we can refer mainly on mindfulness of the mind or Chittanupassana? Much merits for your valuable service. That's the end.
Yeah, many suttas are there. Now say Indriya Bhavana Sutta is one. Then we can say Dvedha Vitakka Sutta, that is in Majjhima Nikaya, where Buddha talks about how one can categorize various thoughts into two categories, wholesome and unwholesome, and deal with them. So that is called Dvedha Vitakka Sutta. And another one called Vitakka Santhana Sutta. That's also in the Majjhima Nikaya. So Buddha comes up with few more strategies to deal with various mental conditions or thoughts. Like replacement of, now suppose there is a lust in the mind. So you can simply replace that with say asubha, with loathsomeness. So that's one strategy in a way. Or you can simply directly look at it. So that is the dasana pahatabba in a way, where you are simply getting to confrontation with the lust directly. So and with that, actually, if the mind is fairly developed with mindfulness, then you can overcome the situation. And so likewise, you can turn your attention to something else. Asati amanasikara. So I say some sort of event is there, you are too much thinking about it, and you understood that it is sort of harmful to think like that. So you are simply turning your attention to something else. That is called, you are simply discarding the existing arambana, existing object, and you are simply turning your attention to something else. So likewise, different strategies are mentioned in the Vitakka Santhana Sutta as well. So there are those other things that came to my mind when come to Chittanupassana. So this is how Buddha explained how to protect one's mind, guard one's mind. And again, we need to develop a fair amount of qualities in the mind if we want to purify it. So that is also there.
Question number 3 of 6. 6, walking mindfulness. Dear Venerable Bhante, I have been practicing walking mindfulness based on your guidelines. During the initial period, for about 5 minutes, I can feel the sensations on the soles of the feet and the differences between left and right. The sensations are very real, such as pressure on the sole and how it is distributing during the walking to the toes, the hot and cold nature and the differences of temperature on the soles, etc. Afterwards, the sensations fade away slowly, and I feel that there is a gap developing between the observer and the sensations. The sensations become distant now. During this period, the mind goes out with thoughts and comes back to see these distant sensations most of the time. Sometimes when the mind gets distracted, I become aware of it and bring back to the walking process. After 20 to 30 minutes, I feel calm, content and relaxed, and the mind stays within this state at ease. My reflection here is about the nature of the mind, which focuses well and keeps ticking when there is no gap with the observation, and tendency to stray away and distract when there is a distance created by the mindful observation, based on my practical observation as above. Is it the mindful observation that creates this distance or the gap between the observer and the observation? Or anyway, is this the nature of the mind? Always this happens, that the difference this time is that we know when the observation becomes distant and the mind started to get distracted. Much merits for explaining this, Bhante, with metta. That's the end.
Yeah, I think because it is true. Now, typically, mind is hooked up with something. Mind is connected to something. So at that time, the possibility of distraction is less because we are forcefully keeping it focused to something. So this is the typical samatha approach that we also do at our early stages. Say you are paying attention to in-breath and out-breath. So in-breath is when we are fully aware of in-breath, so your mind is closely associating in-breath. When you are fully aware of out-breath, your mind is closely associating out-breath. So this in-breath and out-breath become sort of an anchoring point to the mind, because otherwise your mind gets distracted. So therefore, at the earlier stages of our practice, so this actually we are using. But it happens in the present moment. So the benefit is, mind does not associate past and the future. Now, rather it is fairly awakened to the present moment activity. But now, as we move forward in the practice, so more and more the knowledge is developed, the reality of the phenomena going to be understood, so that mind loses its interest, loses its grip, loses its cling or grasping, so that now your sort of association becomes somewhat less. Now, as you mentioned, so there's a little distance going to be created between the object and the observing mind. So this distance improves in a way. Now, kind of a passive observation even can happen. There is no close observation, but kind of a distant observation is there. So at that time, it is possible if you loosen your mindfulness, if you loosen the attention, or if you too much loosen the effort, mind can start to distract. So how to maintain this balance? You are not allowing the mind to get distracted, and again, you are not closely observing the object either, or you are not too closely associating the object, but rather you are distantly observing. So this balancing, these are the ones actually we are practicing. This is why we need to practice. We have to practically engage in the practice, because teaching this, reading about this is easy, but you yourself have to deal with this in your own practice. So that's the difficult part. It is easy to say, but it's difficult to really maintain this well balance. It is, suppose you are starting with the typical observation, you are closely associating the object and you are understanding every nook and corner, say how it is starting, how it is changing, how it is passing away and all these things. So various facets of the object are quite known to you, so that indicates close association. So less distractions maybe. But now, as a result, now mind start to sort of disengage, loosen your grip. So at that time, how to maintain the mind or mindfulness without making it distracted to something outside, because still various outside invitations are there, various sounds are there, sights are there, those may be very attractive, maybe various memories are there, fantasies are there, plans are there, those also may be very attractive, and the object in front of you has now faded, no much interest, the boundaries have faded away. So even on that situation, just to maintain your practice without being distracted, without getting distracted, just to maintain your practice with kind of a disenchantment with the existing object, arising object. Again and again, this object is arising and passing away, and your mind is now sort of maintaining kind of a detached observation, sort of a passive observation, but not distracted. So these are the skills that we need to develop. So you need to practice it. You need to learn it. You need to understand it when mind gets distracted and again take it back. And maybe you can use the same object to establish mindfulness, but later again, once you see the reality, again start sort of a detached observation. So the dispassion is there. So this is how actually the mind develops. This is how the vipassana develops. Buddha say if one see the reality, then the dispassion is inevitable. Disenchantment is inevitable. So these are actually the results of the practice, results of vipassana. So we shouldn't avoid it. Rather, we have to handle it carefully. So you can practically do it. And you yourself have to practically face the situation, and even you can go wrong, nothing harm, again practice, again go prepared. So that's the only way that we can train our mind. It's actually a training. That's why we are telling it's a training. It is not that you can learn meditation simply by books. You yourself have to jump to the situation and face the situation. Practically learn the situation. So that is the only way. Yeah.
Question number 4 of 7. This is a theory question. Dear Pandit, based on the Sabbasava Sutta, we get to understand the importance of getting rid of various hidden tendencies and taints. In our practice of sitting and walking, we come across only a few of these hidden aspects. Is the hidden layer the biggest component, which is similar to an iceberg, which is the method of getting to know and observing them? Stop the practice if you are in seclusion and come and mingle with society. That's the end of the question.
No, this hidden layers become more and more evident as we are deepening our mindfulness. So as you mentioned, the iceberg is not revealed yet when our mindfulness is less. So we are simply dealing with the available part or the visible part. So that is the typical mind. But as we continue our practice, so this difference is going to become less and less. The visible part and the invisible part, that gap become less and less. So your mind become very much merged. So in other terms, one can say the conscious level and the unconscious level become fairly, that boundary become less weakened, so that you are able to even see the deeply hidden layers of the mind as your mind calms down, as your mind becomes still. Because the outer layers are slowly removed, and the inner layers are now going to be evident. Inner layers are fairly revealed to you. So this is actually happens with the practice. So nothing to worry. I mean, you can't immediately retrieve them. Rather, it's a matter of continuing the practice. As we continue our practice, this is how we sort of come across the situation. That is how the mindfulness evolve or the vipassana evolve, and that's why that is how we are able to look at it. That's how we are able to see it. It is not that it is no more it is hidden, rather slowly the hidden layers become evident to us. And how hidden tendencies are triggering our mind, triggering our reactions, are evident to us. So we rather than becoming a victim to it, now we are able to step back and watch it, how mind tries to react. So what are the tendencies popping up? What are the traits coming up? So what are the biases coming up? What are the likes and dislikes coming up? So those, you can watch it. So that indicates, okay, I have this kind of a tendency. So suppose you prefer a certain color and you are going to a shop. So immediately your mind going and selecting that color. Maybe a vessel, maybe a sari or whatever it is. So immediately you go and select it. So that indicates that I have kind of a preference towards that. My mind is programmed towards that kind of a selection. If we can recognize that without being a victim to it, so you can simply, calm down, and you can see how mind being tempted towards that and avoid it. If in case, suppose your wife asks you to bring red color sari. So I'm giving a simple example. But once you go to the sari shop, there's a beautiful blue color sari. So immediately you jump and try to buy that. But you understand, my wife likes red color even though you like blue color. So then you can recognize, this is a kind of a tendency in the mind. If I now simply buy blue color, I might get into trouble. You can't go home. So better buy red color one because your wife likes that. Because now you can recognize your own tendency in the mind, and you can understand your wife's tendency as well. And now prominence has to be given your wife's request because she is the one going to wear the sari. So even though you like the sari, that color, you are not going to wear it. Now she is going to wear it. So better buy red color sari because she wants that. So likewise, we have a choice in a way. Rather than simply become a victim of our own habit, we can now step back and look at it and get the correct decision. Yeah.
Wife would never trust husband to buy sari.
good.
Probably.
Yeah.
Question number 5 about general question. Bhante, regarding your statement in the Dhamma talk on endurance, if someone is blaming you unnecessarily or without any basis, we should be able to say thank you and not to react. If you are a true practitioner of mindfulness, does this mean you can not even demand being treated fairly? Asking to be treated fairly seems based on desire and aversion and something conditional. Appreciate your insights with metta. That's the end.
True. So actually, we all are expecting some kind of respect, kind of appreciation. So those are sort of our inner tendencies we have. But sometimes the situations are there, so we are not yet properly treated. Our task, ourselves are not properly recognized. So these are actual situations we can come across. And if we try to argue, if we try to get into quarrels, so then the situation might be aggravated. So that is what I want to point out. And if we understand, the other person is not yet convinced about my skills in a way. Say for example, he couldn't yet recognize my skills. He couldn't yet really evaluate my skills. So then let me give more time. Let me be patient for some more time till the other person really understands the situation. Because even though you know your skills, you know that you can handle the situation, the other person still don't trust you, still don't have much confidence in you. So this is possible. But with time, the other person may start to understand. That's a high possibility. With time, that if you give more time to him, then that person may start to understand, this one is capable or this one has the skill. So likewise, so demanding or complaining is not the answer, but rather we have to endure the situation. We have to slowly become a kind of, being an example to the other person. So that way I think we can smoothly handle the situation without getting into conflict. So that is what I want to emphasize. And on the other hand, this does not mean that every time we have to be simply passive and always become defeated or lethargic or something like that. So that is in a way kind of a negative attitude. But we are doing the best, but the other person didn't recognize it. So, if we, at that situation, if we become impatient and get into arguments and all these things, then we are actually sort of messing up the situation. But on the other hand, if we are fairly patient and let the other person understand the situation, let him take some time, so I can be patient. I can maintain my sort of calmness, peacefulness in the mind. So because as a practitioner, we should be able to see how even the conceit arises in ourselves. Say another person didn't give the proper respect. So what is the how the conceit coming up in my mind? So my mind is coming and telling, okay, he didn't respect. So why he is not doing that? So likewise, so many thoughts can come in the mind. Sort of an agitation can happen in the mind. So at that time, if we are quite familiar with Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana, so we can recognize how I want to create a self, how I making happens. So that is a kind of a raw material for our practice. It is true that we are not being respected, we are being looked down, doesn't matter. But at that time, how mind reacts, how I making happens, how conceit develops in ourselves, how kind of a unsatisfaction develops in ourselves, in our mind. So this is how, in a way, we can utilize the opportunity to develop spiritually in our side. So therefore, there is nothing to lose. So we can utilize the situation to practice some mindfulness, practice some vipassana. So that is, therefore, we can utilize the situation, we can say. Yeah.
Question number 6 of that. Mindful sitting. Dear Venerable Sir, much merits for your guidance. I am at the point of observing thoughts in my practice. My experience is that while observing the thoughts, there are times that the focus changes to the body as well. If I can give an example. When I start the practice, it is like I am carrying a bunch of balloons in my hand, tied to long strings, and walking. The balloons being the thoughts and the body being the observations in the body. Observing both these things happen at the same time. Then I feel that the body buckles down and gets tightly shrunken. The analogy is then like I suddenly dive into a pool with the balloons still in my hand. So my body condition is now surrounded by the pressure of the water, but the thoughts are freely floating above in the air. After a while, I feel like I let go of the balloons completely and focus on the body only. Still under pressure, but no problem. Very relaxed and very calm. I stay in this position for a while and then come out of it once the bell rings. Please advise if this is okay to go on while observing the thoughts or if there is something else I should be doing. Much merits for your guidance. Thank you. That's the end.
As far as I understood the question, so you are making an analogy that your body is like the observing mind and the balloons around you are the thoughts. Fine. And basically, if we can carefully observe thoughts without trying to suppress them, without trying to immediately reject them, if we have kind of an open attitude towards them, so then we can carefully handle them. Because if we sort of immediately want to get rid of them, then unnecessarily we are agitating the mind. Because actually these things may improve as we continue our practice. At the beginning, suppose we are sort of not yet know how to handle the situation, so we may struggle with the situation. But later, as we develop mindfulness, so we are able to recognize various thoughts at their very early stages, so they are not so strong, because still they are in the early stages. Now we have a better opportunity to deal with them. So we can delicately deal with them. We don't need to immediately push them away, reject them aggressively, but rather we can delicately work with them. We can step back and we can watch how they are popping up, how they are coming up, but we are not promoting them. We have our own island of mindfulness. While being there, we are observing them. And as a result, they start to fade away. So we actually can accommodate them, and at the same time we are not promoting them. Now they can have their own lifetime. We are not interfering with them. We simply have the capacity to watch them. So I used to give a kind of a formula like this. Let them come, let them be, and let them go. So we are simply the observer. We are the non-judgmental observer, where we allow them to come. And again allow them to be. We are not rejecting, we are not suppressing, or we are not embracing, we are not encouraging them, or we are not being deluded by them. We simply be. Very mindfully, we are aware of them. And their nature is to pass away. So that is their own nature. So we don't need to interfere with them. So they have their own intrinsic quality to pass away, because they are conditioned. So that is the Buddha's teaching. That is what Buddha wants to emphasize. All these thoughts have the nature to come and go. So we simply avoid giving them a tea, avoid offering them tea. Simply we step back and watch. So they simply come, they simply be, and they simply go. And we are not bothered. So if we can maintain that sort of attitude, then actually we are fairly undisturbed, and we can maintain our serenity, we can maintain the calmness, peacefulness in the mind.
We're about to go over time. We have two more questions.
Yeah.
Is it okay?
Yeah.
Question 7 of 8. This is a general question. Venerable Bande, if someone is of the wrong view and this person is a sibling, you listen to the person with wrong view, which is the wrong view on general life, but one day you try to explain that this is not correct and you go to have an argument with that sibling. And you say to the sibling, there is something wrong with you, and these words hurt the sibling with wrong view. Since the motive of saying something wrong with you is correct, that is to correct the sibling, are these words not correct to be used and too harsh? How can you help such a sibling with wrong view, especially if the sibling is highly qualified? Because being especially if the sibling is highly qualified, I think some sort of degree or something. That's what they mean.
Highly qualified.
Highly qualified. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because being patient and listening to his wrong view does not help the sibling. Appreciate your advice. Much merits and with metta. That's the end.
Yeah, I think. It depends on the situation. You can try your best. You can patiently tell the correct thing as you wish and what you know. And if you think you are quite sure about your view and you are not having the wrong view, you are having the correct view, and now you are explaining that correct view as much as possible according to the Buddha's teaching and with, say, evidence maybe. So then the other person, actually, if that person in a way has to be fairly humble to sort of consider your view or consider your words. But on the other hand, sometimes what happens is when the other person is fairly educated and all, then they become fairly conceited as well. So then they don't consider someone else's ideas, someone else's words, because they think that he know everything, I know everything. Others are simply not knowing, or others are ignorant. I am the best. So that kind of a conceited attitude is quite harmful, and so less possibility of correcting in such situation. Because he is fairly conceited, very difficult to convince. So then it's a waste of time in a way. So it depends on the situation, depends on the person. There are people actually, even though they are highly educated, they are very humble. They can listen to another person. They can consider another person. Consider another person's idea. And impartially, they can evaluate the situation. So such skill is there. But on the other hand, certain others are there, maybe highly educated, but again, highly conceited. Such cases are very difficult to correct. So they simply hooked in their own views, and we can typically say they are dittigata. So you know, Buddha's teaching is Buddha teaches three levels of perversions. Only at the perception level, sanyayupallas. Say you are seeing certain things, and you can be ignorantly taken to a kind of a conclusion. So that's the perception level perversion. Then suppose you are continuing to think again and again based on that perversion, and so because of this too much thinking, now the thinking level perversion can happen. So the mind level perversion is there, what you call chitta vipallasa. And assume that you are continue to think like that, several months, several years you are thinking like that. Now it become deeply rooted in yourself. Now it is very difficult to change. You are extremely hooked up in that view. There we call ditti vipallasa, where that wrong view becomes your inner nature. That is the way that mind is working now. It's very difficult to change. So that ditti vipallasa, the perversion happens at the level of the view, is extremely difficult to change. So that is why even Buddha don't go and try to change them, because they are wrong view is deeply rooted. So that is no way to help. So likewise, different characters are there, different people are there. So we don't know to what level that they are sort of associating these kind of wrong views. So if they are fairly humble, and again are fairly flexible to consider someone else's view, then there's a fair chance of correcting them.
Question number 8, this is the last one. Theory question. Bhante, considering Adivasana Bahadamba, if you are in the patient and endurance mode, putting up with everything in an adverse situation or unfair situation, what is the refuge? I heard Bhante mention today that the purity, clearness and relaxed state should be the refuge when everything around is falling apart. I appreciate Bhante's clarification with metta. That's the end.
Can you repeat the question, Chatu?
Bhante, considering Adivasana Pahadabha,
if you're
in the patient and endurance mode, putting up with everything in an adverse situation or unfair situation, what is the refuge? I heard Bhante mention today that the purity, clearness and relaxed state should be the refuge when everything around is falling apart.
Correct.
Appreciate Bhante's clarification.
Correct, yes. Yeah, your understanding is correct. So basically our mind now has its own solace, has its own island, has its own sort of a refuge. That is nothing but the inner purity, nothing but that pure state of mind, pure awareness, unassociated awareness, where mind has that its own freedom. So this free state, freedom of the mind, is more important or more valuable than anything else, in a way, we can say like that. Actually, we are trying to be there as much as possible, because that is the only true nature, Buddha say. So this true nature, Buddha say, has to be fairly protected. So because everything else happening outside and maybe even inside have the nature to come and go, have the nature to arise and pass away. So they have the nature to change. So therefore we can't believe them, we can't trust them, because they are so vulnerable. But this inner purity or inner quality, inner calmness, inner peacefulness, inner awareness is fairly trustworthy. It can be maintained. It can last for some time. So this is how we can utilize it. So that is why Buddha asks us to sort of protect it, develop it, enhance it, because that becomes one's safety. That becomes one's refuge. So I can remember in Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, Buddha mentioned that Panyadithano, that is where you are developing the knowledge, vipassana knowledge, and Satchadithano, that is where you are developing this true nature. So you are establishing yourself in the true nature. So this true nature is this unattached nature in the mind, unentangled nature in the mind, non-grasping nature in the mind. So that is the true nature that we have to develop, maintain, or associate. So your answer is very correct. Yeah.
That was the last question, Bhante, so yeah. I'll finish up. I'd just like to thank Bhante and Pascal Merits for giving up valuable time to enable this program to happen. Also, the people seen and unseen behind for making sure this program works. And also, lastly, to all the participants, because without you, there would be no program. So with that, I'd like to conclude. Teruvan Saranai.
Teruvan Saranai. Sukhi Hotu.